This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Phileas Club, the show where we get people from around the world to tell you how they saw the news from the past month. This is episode number 35 for April 2010. No, 11. See, the problem is I'm reading my text, and I haven't updated my text for 2011, apparently, so let me do that right now. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. My name is Patrick Beja, and we are going to have a different show today because, for various reasons, we only have half an hour. So the game is going to be to see how much we can pack into that half hour, which should be quite a lot because Turkey isn't here, so he's not going to be bogging us down. But you'll be happy to hear that we have two amazing hosts anyway. We have Randy Jordan, who's been here quite a bit on the show. How are you doing, Randy?
Very good. Aloha. Good morning. It's a beautiful day in sunny Southern California.
And by the way, it's your fault we only have half an hour. So
it's my let's blame Randy.
Yeah. The lovely voice you're hearing is that of Maria, who hasn't been on the show in forever.
Oh yeah, it seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, it's been, and it was actually quite a different time back then. When was it? Like a year ago or something?
Well, it was previous to the pregnancy, at least. So yeah. I'm now a mother, as well as a nurse, and whatever I am.
So I guess you'll be having a very different view on the world now that you have a little baby to take care of. You'll be all emotional and you won't be able to think
straight.
Hey, that's
a bit sexist, isn't it?
The last time that Maria and I were on this show together, we talked about healthcare. The entire episode was about healthcare. And I'm so glad we're not talking about healthcare this time.
All right. So in case you don't know, Maria is from Sweden. Randy is now recently relocated in California. And mm-hmm. I'm from Paris. And we will be trying to tell you, the listener, how we saw the different news that happened, and, you know, the different things that happened in the world in the past month. However, we were talking earlier while waiting for Randy, Maria and I, and we were thinking that a lot of what's been happening is revolving around the Middle East and the revolutions there. And we've been talking about this for like 3 months, and not that it's not important. It's obviously very important, but we're going to try to go a little bit quickly over it and get to other stories that are, you know, extremely important, like the royal wedding and things like that.
oh my God.
Maria might have an interesting opinion on this.
Would you agree with me, Patrick, that for all of the modern world, the number one news story over the last month or four has been unrest in the Middle East? I mean, that's
yeah.
There's no you're not going to go somewhere in the world and find, oh, they're not talking about this. They're talking about something else.
Well, I don't know about the rest of the world. I mean, I can imagine that Asia, for example, is not as focused on it. Maybe they are, but definitely for France, at least, we've had every single day, you know, the daily update on what's happening in Yemen, which is having major unrest. Obviously, Libya is still very, very active on that front with Gaddafi. We heard about his latest speech where he's saying, you know, we would agree to a ceasefire, but there is no way I'm going to leave because I'm not an elected president. I'm above that. I'm sort of a guide. So right. I'm not leaving. There is no point. And obviously Syria, which is, you know, it's interesting to see that these every single country, I think I said it last time, but they're following the same pattern. And Syria, which we thought last month might go differently, maybe, is apparently following again the same pattern. Things are going a little bit better in Libya.
But the violence spiral is kind of upgoing, isn't it? It becomes more and more violent all the time. If you look at it from a Swedish point of view, we see most reports about Libya and Syria, and especially Syria the last few weeks now.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, it's. I guess the same pattern is things are turning out to be a little bit different in Libya and Syria because the government is not giving up at all. But it's not unlike, you know, they're promising to relax the rules, and for some reason they seem to think that this will be enough to keep them in power. And the street is obviously not happy with any of it. And it's not, you know, saying we're going to stop the state of emergency. That, you know, they seem to think that that will be enough. And it's never enough. So
no, and it's not enough for the rest of the world either. I mean, NATO is not listening on that ear at all. Yeah. So, and I'm glad they don't.
Sure.
I often struggle with this notion, and I'm not saying that it's a wrong notion, it just always gives me pause when we are incredibly outraged when a government official, whatever that, a representative of a government just goes and kills someone in the street. That is an incredibly offensive thing for any, you know, to happen in any place in the world. If there are protesters or someone walking along with their groceries, and whether it's the army or some police or just anyone with a gun acting on behalf of the government, and they kill someone, that's horrible. And for some reason, our response, though, is to encourage those people to get guns of their own and kill the government. You know what I mean? And like, there aren't also lives and valuable lives at risk in that regard. There has never been a time when everyone in the government has said, oh, no, don't kill us. You know, we're innocent and walked away from their jobs. You know, there's never been a time of that. And it just always gives me pause. I don't know why I'm so quick to say, okay, kill those government guys then. You know,
well, I guess it's about, you know, it's about blame. You're asking who is the offending party in this dispute. And at least, you know, most of the time, at least in these instances, the government is the one who is the oppressive, the oppressive body. So it's okay, quote unquote, to take a gun and kill the government, but it's, you know, or a representative of that government. But it's not okay for the government to go and kill innocent people, because I guess the government is not innocent. And when we say the government, it's obviously the army, the police, all of that.
Government is supposed to represent the people. That's the whole thing of a government. So, of course, it goes against everything we believe, the democratic
world. I just wish a Syria is the perfect place for it, too. I wish just once there would be a report, a credible report of some troops shooting people in the street, and everyone in the government just threw their hands up and said, okay, I don't want to have anything to do with this, and walked out. You know, just once I'd like that to happen.
You know, it's interesting. I was discussing, obviously we've been discussing this for a few months with my girlfriend, and she was saying, I don't understand why none of these dictators, when they see that the situation is spiraling out of control, they don't just, you know, become the hero and say, okay, you know what? I'm giving the power to the street. I'm going to go away quietly and, you know, keep a few billions and turn out to retire and be happy wherever they go live, you know, go live on an island or... And they,
well,
they are...
as you were saying last episode, Gaddafi is clearly going all Charlie Sheen back there. So,
yeah, but right. I mean, he is a special case. But when you think of people in, you know, Mubarak and Ben Ali and all of those, they could have just, you know, said, this is bad, especially, you know, Mubarak or even now, well, Gaddafi, maybe not. But I don't know, you know, when they're seeing that it's a genuine movement that is not just going to stop when they say, okay, we won't shoot you at night now, we'll just shoot you during the day. Are you cool with that? Okay, good. You know, that's not going to work. So just...
That, The opposite actually happened somewhere in the world this month. Well, actually, it was in March. Jean-Claude Duvalier returned to Haiti.
Well,
he actually went back.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well for him, but...
No, but I just think it's unbelievable, like, in these places where we think, I wish these dictators would just leave, you know, just leave. We actually had a dictator go back. That's amazing.
It's, you know, I think one thing we have to say, we could talk about this for a long time, but one thing I want to say before we close that topic is... It's incredibly, we have to salute the courage of the people that are pushing through and pushing forward, especially in, you know, Libya, obviously it's become a war zone, but Syria today is not an open civil war. It's a bunch of protesters that are still under the iron fist of the regime. And one of the things we've been seeing in France quite a bit is how the protesters are facing with, you know, facing the government and its authority and putting up videos on YouTube, for example, or just going out in the streets and showing their you know, the fact that they don't want the government in place anymore, with a huge risk for their lives. You know, it's not obviously it's not a video game or a some book or some movie that you're watching where you see, oh, that's heroism and some guy, you know, walking in slow motion. That's people actually risking their lives for to fight a government that is oppressive. And I just feel like maybe that's not discussed enough. The heroism of these real people is not discussed enough. We're talking about
but they're still being
picture.
I mean, these guys are being shot at every day, and as I was saying, the violence is escalating. So what are your country stand? Have you even discussed if, you know, you need outside intervention in Syria too, just as we do in Libya? Anyone dared to touch that subject, because no one really wants to go there?
Well, the thing is, for Libya already, there's been a lot of discussions in the past month, because after the first push, the Libyan forces, I mean the Gaddafi forces, were starting to gain the advantage. So in NATO, there was a lot of discussions, and France and Italy and the UK and a few others had to push through to sort of... Now we didn't really decide on the NATO level to go back and it seems like it wasn't officially decided to resume the bombing of the Gaddafi forces, but it still started anyway. So it feels like France and a few others have been pushing to make sure that the rebels are not completely overrun.
Yeah.
In the, you know, within the scope of the previous resolution, and most importantly, they've been sending people to teach the rebels who are, you know, they used to be dentists and students, and so to teach them a little bit and give them coordination and communication devices and things like that. So, yeah, there's definitely a feeling that we took part in this for Libya. Syria is another matter entirely, because the government is not just, you know, it's just at the stage of protests in the street. It's not an open civil war at this point. So we're not really sure. It feels like we're not really sure what we can do in Syria.
But how do you make that distinction anyway? When protests in the street result in people getting killed, I mean slaughtered. It's kind of that's revolution, right? I mean, it's hard to draw a line. Well, if it's less than 100 people that get killed in a day, I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to say. If it's only in one little area, we don't necessarily call it revolution. It has to be sort of nationwide. I don't know.
It's definitely not a war in Syria at this point.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You don't have armed protesters that are banding together.
No, one side is just getting shot down.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I mean, that's the grounds for stepping in, I think.
I guess so.
Saying no.
Yeah,
I actually read where this one individual was quoted as saying he would rather the Israelis step in. Like, wow, that is serious. Like,
that's
to come
weird.
From Syria, that's, you are in a lot of danger when you're calling for the Israelis to step in.
I don't know if you know, but Sweden actually have 10 planes in Libya right now.
Really?
So here we have a huge debate about, you know, are we going to take them home or not now? Are we going to stay down there? And the right-wing side, who's currently at power in Sweden, they say, are you crazy? We have to step it up. And the left-wing side said, no, take the planes home.
So what's the main mainstream opinion about these revolutions in Sweden?
Well, actually, we are pro, I say, both on the left and the right side. I mean, even if the Social Democrats says that we should pull out our planes, everybody is for this this people uprising. Everybody's applauding that, definitely.
Yeah, of course. I mean, people uprising is, no one's going to say, no, they should stay home and, you know, raise their children. But I guess the way to go about it is the
Debate here is, how much involved should we be?
Yeah.
Should it be resolved by themselves, or should we be involved?
So what's, and so the left wing is saying, no, just let them handle it.
Oh, well, it's not as black and white. I mean, from the beginning, everybody says, oh, we can't go in and play Big Brother, just like evil United States used to do. But then the debate, and then people says, oh, wait a minute, this is a completely different situation, because these are unarmed civilians that are being murdered. So even the left wing, there are definitely people who think that we should stay as a military force, definitely.
Randy, are you guys, I mean, in the US, are you still paying attention to this, or did the whole tornado thing take away from the...
Well, if you're asking me what's the biggest story in the United States, like what's the dominant only story in the United States for the last week,
it's the weather.
No, it's the weather.
Of course.
In fact, I was a little surprised at how the royal wedding didn't eclipse it for even a day. Because I'm old enough to remember very clearly when Charles and Diana got married, and that was the biggest news story in a decade. You know, it was something that dominated all media to a degree that you know you have a hard time comparing it to something. That royal wedding, I would compare to the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, you know, in terms of media in the 80s. But then You come to this time in our history, and I'm thinking, oh, royal wedding, that's going to really dominate, at least, no, not in the United States. It was small, I would say, in the United States
because of the weather.
Because of the storms. The storms went on day after day after day, and, you know, after 2 days it was over 100 people dead and everyone started freaking out. And then after 3 days it was 200 people dead. This morning we're hearing 350 deaths due to, and that's cumulative over a really large part of the United States. So it seems like
this keeps happening, you know, every year, or actually every 6 months you have incredible, you know, either storms or tornadoes or something. And I don't know, I'm not trying to be insensitive, but are these happening in different places? Or because obviously Florida is always, you know, one of the theaters of these.
Florida suffers more from hurricanes, right. And this was primarily front-driven tornadoes. But we're talking about the deadliest single day, the second deadliest single day in the history of the United States as far as from weather. And the number one was 1925. So I wouldn't say
so
this is a
like
very common
Okay, I see. Because
occurrence.
From here, I guess from here, the way we saw it was incredible destruction, but we don't go into enough detail to know, you know, I guess this is something that... For me in France, maybe I didn't, you know, look into it enough, but it seemed like it was just another natural disaster happening in the U.S. But
I don't agree, though. In the Swedish media, this has been a big story, definitely, and especially since 350 people are dead. Mm. And that's no matter how common disasters are, that's big.
Well, sure. And something I've noticed is that you can have a lower count of deaths And it's a bigger story if those deaths are more widespread. You see what I'm saying? So if there was an explosion and 350 people died in one town, it's not as big a story as when those deaths are spread out over dozens of towns. And I think the reason why is because you feel like you feel at risk as an observer of the news. You know, you're watching the news thinking, gosh, I could be next, you know? I can't get far enough away from this thing because it's so widespread.
Sure.
Oh, well, so, that's also the classical example of us reacting so much more to deaths in the Western world if we live in the Western world ourselves, which is sometimes a bit depressing. I did that myself. I have to admit this. I'm going to do that on air. This is very embarrassing, but I was watching the news from Japan, as everyone else, and I was sitting there breastfeeding my baby, crying, just as you said, Patrick, and watching this horrible thing, and I went to my computer and I thought, I have to give some money. And I went into this help organization's homepage, and they said, well, you know, Japan has a good economy, you know. We don't send them money. We might, you know, send some materials and people there, but we don't send them money because they have a good economy. But Libya, for example, they could use your money. And I was like, yeah, they could. I'm such an idiot. And I ended up giving money to Libya.
Oh, well, very good for you.
For the United States, the Japan story, which is still way up there, I would call it one of the top three for the month of April. For the United States, the Japan story is starting to show you the difference in how large the United States is. Because if you just ask me, how is the U.S. handling Japan in the news, I would say, well, where are you in the U.S.? It's still much more of a story on the West Coast, closer to Japan, than it is on the East Coast. And I think that probably counts for instance, Canada. I'm sure that in British Columbia, there's a lot more talk about Japan, a lot more daily coverage of Japan than over in Quebec.
To close off this section on the Middle East and, you know, local stories too, I just want to say, so we can't really talk about, we're not going to talk about the terrorist attack in Morocco, but obviously that was a huge topic a couple of days ago. And the Fatah and Hamas reconciling is an enormous story which will have consequences for the months and years to come, which would be interesting to talk about at some point.
I have a feeling a month from now on the Phileas Club, you'll be talking about Fatah and Hamas and have a lot more perspective.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Côte d'Ivoire was also quite big because Gbagbo finally, he was arrested actually, and Alassane Ouattara actually ended up getting the power that, you know, he was elected for a few months ago. So that was pretty big too. The one thing I want to get into just shortly is the story of Tunisian immigrants that, well, left Tunisia, of course, and arrived in Italy. Tens of thousands of them have been arriving in Italy, and that's been causing huge issues for Italy and France, actually, because they are obviously illegal immigrants. Some of them don't even have identification, and they've been disrupting the Tunisian, you know, economy and just, you know, social climate, because there no country can just absorb that many people so quickly. And the thing is, they want to, these people, a lot of them want to go to France because they have some family in France, uncle, you know, something. Of course, we have very close ties with the Northern Africa part of the world. This caused a big issue, I'm getting to that, because Italy, since they don't have any papers, they shouldn't be allowed to move across borders, even within, you know, the Schengen space. Mm-hmm. But Italy doesn't want them to stay in Italy. So what they've been doing is giving away temporary authorizations that have absolutely no legal, you know, grounds, and basically getting them out of Italy through completely illegal means of giving them authorizations, papers that allow them to get out of Italy and go to France. So that has been a source of discussion between the two countries. And on a broader note, At least that's the way I feel. I think a lot of people in France feel the same way. It's amazingly irresponsible of the Italian government to, obviously it's not easy to deal with that issue, but to just blatantly, you know, give authorizations to people who don't even have identification is something that is quite beyond what anyone, I think, has done. Not certainly not beyond what anyone has done, but within the Schengen space in the EU, it's almost, if you had told me someone had done this, you know, a month ago, I would have said, that's a funny joke. You can't do that. So, yeah, that was quite a big topic. And it's led France and Italy to discuss things and to maybe even change the rules of the Schengen space to make it to close the borders of the Schengen space in cases like these.
But do you mean close the borders around, like on the outside of that block of countries, or
so for
between
example,
the countries themselves?
The way I imagine it going, I'm not, you know, I haven't read up all of this, but the way it's I understand it is, in case of specific circumstances, then France could close its border. It's, you know, the border it used to have, the border it has between France and Italy, and say, you know, Italians, now from now on, you have to show a passport to come to France. You have to have a visa, for example.
Right,
you have
right.
to where because between the countries that are part of the Schengen space, you don't even need a passport. You can just show your ID card and you're fine. You can just go without any sort of, it's not even that you have an automatic temporary tourist visa. It's that you can do anything you want. You can just go there and, you know, start living there.
So, I mean, the Schengen agreement is 25 years old. The current rule set has been in place for 15 years. Right. Do you feel like Sarkozy should be able to just to go to Italy and change the agreement? Just
no, of course not. This is a huge concern. I mean, this is
it's a concern for other countries in the EU as well, of course. And I think it's being debated in all countries at the moment because people are moving more. And recently we also, from Sweden, we get a lot of people from Macedonia that are recently gotten a permit to travel within the EU. And what has happened here is that we have seen an increased racism in the country growing. I'm not sure about France, but I saw tendencies lately that you're also having a growing racism.
Yeah, I mean the far right party has been growing in the polls in the past few months. We've always had a far right party. If you remember, in 2002, the far right candidate came second in the presidential election. So that they have spikes from time to time, but at the same time, we have a very large Northern African population in France. It's not. I don't think. People who are not racist would say, that's fine, we can just absorb the whole immigrating population of the recently revolutionized Northern African countries. No country can do that. You have to regulate that anyway. And I really don't think it's about racism at all. Obviously, you have to create something, some infrastructure or some sort of process to help the people who have. But maybe, you know, I don't know. It's a large debate, but I just wanted to point out that was being discussed. And the Schengen Accord is something that I think no one wants to see revisited too widely.
Well, this is the point where I always say on the Phileas Club, everything you've been talking about for the last 10 minutes, zero impact in the United States via the media. I mean, I would imagine you would have to watch the most comprehensive channel all day long to even hear the phrase Schengen Agreement. I mean, really, it just doesn't get through in the United States.
That's understandable, you know? It's a huge deal for us, but it has consequences that don't necessarily affect countries outside of the EU specifically. So, but I'm surprised though that it's been discussed a lot in Sweden too. I would have thought it's one of those, you know, people in the South do things and weird stuff happens.
We're part of the European Union, though, so
no, of course,
Schengen
of course,
does but, affect us.
Of course, but you know,
and we're usually one of the biggest. We have taken almost the most amount of immigrants to our country the last 20 years.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize. Because my whole view, now my view of Scandinavia is sort of colored by Finland. And in Finland, you know, when you see one person who's not, you know, paper white, pale and blonde, you sort of ring a bell because you think something's going wrong. They have very, very few immigrants, even though they just got a parliamentary election and the True Finns, which is the far right party, they're some of the crazies. We have a lot of far-right parties.
I live in Sweden's third biggest city, and yeah, we have 33% immigrants in
the
city.
Wow, so you're really not Finland at all.
No.
All right. You know what? We are already half an hour in, but I really, really want to talk about the royal wedding.
And it's also very funny that Randy says, I haven't heard a thing about this thing with immigrants or Schengen in the United States, but he have heard about the royal wedding.
Well, of course. I mean, you can't escape that. That's yeah, something the United States. The United States alone probably had 5 dozen news organizations, you know, covering it. So
I mean,
they're going to put it on the air. If they're going to send people over there, they're going to spend time on the air.
Well, I think it's safe to say that, you know, reports say that there were 2 billion people watching. So it's safe to assume that every single country was doing a massive amount of reporting on the royal wedding. What I would like to know is how people were approaching it. Because from what I understand, I mean, what I've seen around me is some French people were sort of angry for some reason, but most people were just like, yeah, fine, whatever. It's kind of funny. Let's just, we're amused by this display of strange, you know, pride for 2 people getting married when, yes, she looks pretty, but you have to remember that we are, you know, obviously very far removed from any sort of royalty and, you know, monarchical events in this mm-hmm. country since we sort of, you know, cut the heads of our kings and queens a few years ago. But I was always assuming that the people...
We admire you for that. At least part of our country.
Well, that's the thing. You guys in Sweden have a queen.
We have a monarchy. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
We have this little king and these princesses that are just waving and having fancy clothes on and no power at all.
I would assume that you were interested in all this and that you would take it with, you know, that it would be fun for you to watch that happening.
Well, we had royal wedding last summer. Yeah. Our Crown Princess Victoria got married, and that was a big hoo-ha. And we had a 9-hour TV show showing that wedding on the television, and everybody was talking about it. Surprisingly enough, because monarchy is falling in popularity, and mostly it's little old ladies who think that we should keep our monarchy. So when they die eventually, I'm not sure we're going to have a monarchy anymore, especially not since our king, Carl Gustav, has a book came out last year about all his affairs with different women and scandalous musical stars and stuff like that.
Okay, so he didn't write the book. I thought you were saying that
a very close friend of his wrote the book, and these are such secure sources that everybody, the media and the public, and I mean,
believe him?
Everybody believes it, and the way that the royal court have handled it makes you believe it even more. So I definitely think it's true. I mean, he's famous for being a playboy, isn't he?
But I have no idea. just so you understand, I never know anything about any, you know, crowned person in the world at all.
No.
So it's very, for that royal wedding, did you guys, because I would think in Sweden it would be almost a day off also, because, you know, hey, they're getting married, it's a party. But you're saying that people don't really like that kind of event.
people love the crown princess. They think she's smart, beautiful, and everything that her father isn't.
You're talking about the Swedish monarchy.
And she married a man of the people, a very down-to-earth man that comes from a small village. So that's, you know, people like that kind of stuff. It has a fairy tale quality to it. So their wedding made popularity go up for our royal house. Mm. And at the same time, it was pulled down by the father making a fool of himself.
And what about William and Kate, though?
Yeah, that's the funny thing, because on one page they say Swedish people are losing their trust to monarchy and are questioning its existence. And then the last few days, the English wedding has been on every front page. It's been the far biggest news. We had that. Second has been the floodings in America. And then down the line on fifth, sixth spot, there has been Syria Libya.
So people are actually very interested in that wedding.
Well, even apparently. Though, well,
you know, it's like people saying, yeah, AT&T sucks. When the iPhone comes out on Verizon, I'm going to go to Verizon right away. AT&T sucks. And then, you know, the iPhone comes out on Verizon and everyone's watching the royal wedding. I mean, you know, if you see what I mean. People say the monarchy sucks, and then there's something that happens, and they're all in front of their TVs.
I really
can't explain it because it eludes me. I have certainly not spent any time telling.
Were you watching the wedding?
No, I was not watching. I got a call from my grandma who said, Maria, have you seen the hats? And I'm like, what hats, Grandma? What are you talking about?
The hats were spectacular.
Oh, I'm happy you watched.
I want a website. I know one exists, but I want a website where I can go look at the top 100 stupidest hats that someone got a picture of from the royal wedding. Seriously, maybe top 500. It was amazing.
So I imagine you did watch. And by the way, a website with the top 100 stupidest hats would be very different from
website,
would be a very different thing from a website with the 100 stupidest top hats.
That's correct. Very good.
Yeah. So you've been watching it then?
In the States? No. No, not at all.
I mean,
For one thing, I don't have your royal wedding on a Friday. Do it on a Saturday. What are you thinking? I don't understand that at all.
It was the middle of the night for you guys, wasn't it?
Right. That's exactly right. And they also had it earlier in the day than they. Now I realize I've been to a fair number of weddings. You try to have a wedding at midday. That's something people always do. But in this case, they should have, if they really wanted to make the biggest splash, they should have had it late in the afternoon, so that a number of people in the United States could have seen it, because there's just no, everybody I know said, oh, well, I'm not going to get up at 2 a.m. to watch the wedding.
What was the general opinion on it, though? Because you guys don't have a monarchy either, and we don't really care about any, we sort of watch it with a you know, amusement rather than fervor. Is that the case?
That's the same thing here. You know, in Canada, you're in the Commonwealth, and you get the day off. You know, like in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, all over the Commonwealth. India got the day off. Well, some of India. I'm sure a lot of India didn't know it was happening. but you know, in the Commonwealth, you got the day off. People had although I would imagine on the west coast of Canada, you know, or even in Australia, New Zealand, people aren't going to you know, go out of their way in the middle of the night. Or, you know, in Australia, New Zealand, late in the evening, you know, in the west coast of Canada, early in the morning. That's just ridiculous. But the United States, there was no day off. There was not a lot of sort of stoppage of other news. Now, I will say, I think Americans had some fatigue on the story. You know, through the month of April, there is a point where you get tired of hearing about the upcoming wedding. I'm so glad it's over. Mm. I've heard a number of people say they're so glad it's over. Now, would you kids please go on a honeymoon so we can stop hearing about this thing?
But go back to serious business.
Right.
You know, but what was... Oh, sorry, keep going.
I was just
going
to say the wedding itself, just because of its day and time of day, didn't get as much attention in the States right. as it could have.
I was surprised. I work with a lot of English people, and I was surprised that they didn't really... You know, of course, when they ended up having the, you know, saying their vows, and some of us were having it in the background on YouTube, the English people also ended up watching it and watching the kiss on the balcony and all of that. But there was a lot less, out of all the people I have around me that were, you know, I know lots of different nationalities, the English people were the most immune to the wedding craziness. They were like, fine, whatever, we don't care, you know, silly hats and old people sitting in a church, fine. And I was surprised. There were a lot of people who were very excited from other countries. Although obviously
I think it depends on who you know. I mean, the English people you surround yourself with, Patrick, aren't necessarily royalists, are they?
Well, no, but it doesn't. I don't think anyone is like super royalist. Like,
my fiance is just annoyed at the whole thing and a little bit embarrassed on his country's behalf, and he's English.
There is a little bit of that, and also one thing I don't understand is the haters. Like, why do you? A lot of people are just go crazy when you mention William and Kate. They go in France, as I was saying, but, you know, some in other countries too, they go like, that's ridiculous, that's horrible, that's monarchies, we don't need them.
The thing that's kind of appalling is the fact that actually the state is putting in quite a lot of money to these weddings.
Sure, but they're making for the country a huge amount of money from the economic
activity. But they're
also
the richest landowners in the country. At the same time, these people, the royal family, mm-hmm. the biggest landowner in Great Britain. So why should the taxpayers then pay for their wedding? You could argue that they make money in good, you know, public appearance and tourism or whatever.
Well,
but
that's
even
exactly
if you took
why.
Down even if you took down the
I think
the royal system in Britain, then just as many tourists would visit Buckingham Palace.
I'm not sure they would make it. The economy would be, you know, the whole part of the economy that's based on the monarchy would then not exist. And I think it's quite a big part. You know, buying stupid plates with Kate's face on, that wouldn't exist. And, you know, they're putting in like, I don't know, 300 million pounds, and they're guessing it's going to incur 2 billion pounds in spending or whatever. You know, I don't really understand why the old, you know, disliking, sure, the vehement hating is less of a, I don't know. I just look at it as my weird, strange cousins that have a queen that waves on the balcony and doesn't make me angry, but I don't know. All right, we could probably discuss this for quite a long time still, but we're a little bit out of time. Do you guys want to add something? I keep interrupting you, so
I always enjoy ending the show on a bit of news that's lighthearted.
Go ahead.
Unlikely royal weddings.
All right, which is serious business.
Yeah.
So as I'm sure you've heard, we have a not serious, but very deadly serious presidential contender in the United States who has just come from nowhere in the month of April to...
Oh, holy crap. Are you going to be talking about His Royal Highness the Hair Dude?
We shall overcome. That's
Mr.
right.
Trump.
Donald Trump.
So, I wanted to ask you about it because I've seen, you know, people talking about it on Twitter, but I don't know what he said or what happened. So thank you.
So in the month of April, out of nowhere, this this reality show star who also tries to convince the world that he's very wealthy, and he's not very wealthy. He just acts like he is. Donald Trump has established himself as a potential candidate for president with the Republican Party, which is odd because he used to. You know, only 10 years ago, there was talk that he would be a Democrat candidate for some office. But he now likes the Republican Party because, I mean, who among the among the wacky doesn't like the Republican Party in the United States. If you're wacky, you know, if you're a clown, that's the place to be. It's the party that's somewhat out of power, so you get to, you know,
also don't have one clear candidate, so if he wants to get anywhere.
Right. Right. So, right. And clowns love a car full of other clowns, so he wants to get in. And so it just out of nowhere, all of a sudden, Donald Trump is talking about whether or not he's going to run for president. And within a really short span of 3 weeks, he went from, oh, that's a joke, to they did a poll and he was the number one choice among Republican likely voters for their nomination for president.
That is so
and it's
scary.
Just, it's mind-boggling. And of course, he can't just, if he really wanted to be president, he would have done that and then shut up, but he can't shut up. And just yesterday, he had a party in Las Vegas at one of his properties where 1,000 people came to see him give a speech. And rather than shut up, he lost his mind and was recorded and quoted as saying things that are just so not presidential. You know, just
like this, what?
A lot of curse words. A lot of things that you'd never say about any president. It doesn't matter. You know, there's a certain respect that you have for the president of the United States, even if you're a part of the opposition. And he went well outside of that. You know, just so not. It wasn't even very.
Was
grown
he the
up.
One that was bringing up the Obama birth certificate thing?
Yes, that's how he got his. That's how he got his foot in the door in early April. He just came out and told some reporters, I don't think Obama was born in the United States. And they, the reporters went crazy. Oh my gosh, Donald Trump wants to run for president, you know, thinks that Obama isn't an American. And it just went from there. And it's just been so fun. I can't tell you how much fun it has been to get the news every day and see what he has done next. It's better than Charlie Sheen, because with Charlie Sheen, there's nothing on the line. There's nothing important about Charlie Sheen making an idiot of himself, you know? Donald Trump could actually end up debating Barack Obama. Please, I'm begging the universe, please make that happen.
That would be fun indeed. One thing I want to mention also is something that a few people sent in emails and Twitter messages to me. It's also a funny, lighthearted story from France. In France, you're allowed to drink. It's okay to drink a glass of wine or beer at lunch. Of course, you know, that would be the country where that's okay. But it's also okay in the government and the administration. And part of the government and the administration is the police. And part of the police force is the anti-riot police, which at some point, one of the directors of that corps got a picture taken of them having a glass of wine at lunch during a strike or, you know, demonstration or something like that. I'm not clear on the details, but the important thing is, from that point on, it was decided by Sarkozy and others that that's probably not the best idea, so we're going to ban, you know, put a ban on drinking while you're on the job, which seems kind of reasonable, but the anti-riot police didn't think so and went on strike. So they went on strike and
okay,
they really
so hey,
want
can
to
they
have...
drink now when they are on strike, but there's kind of a riot going on?
I'm not exactly sure what happens when they're on strike, or maybe if they're the ones doing the rioting, they I don't know.
They can't drink. Yeah.
So that was kind of a funny story too. And I would love to talk about Mr. Hare and the police and all of that and lots of stuff more. But I'm sure we'll have chances to talk about some of these topics later in the coming months. But for now, we have to bring this show to a close. I have to leave, and I'm sure you guys have stuff to do too. So I'm going to end this session by asking you guys where people can find you on the internet if they want to follow you outside of the show. Maria.
Well, I'm only present on Twitter, and that would be my name. So it's Maria Sandfors.
Excellent. Yeah, that's true. You're giving out your full name now.
Yes, I am.
that's
and I'm the only one in the world with that name, actually. So really? It's a bit scary. Yeah.
Okay. Well, don't go stalk her.
A little stalking is okay, right, Maria? just a little bit.
You can stalk me, Randy. I'm cool
with
that.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And Randy, if people want to stalk you, what should they do?
Oh, twitter.com/RandyDeluxe. And still to this day, I am the only person in the world trading by that name. Like, I don't know why. Why it's not more popular. Randy Deluxe, that's the name.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. And for me, it's not Patrick. I mean, it's not Patrick. Everywhere. Ah, never mind. Okay, thanks a lot for everyone. And we'll talk to you again in a month with hopefully Turkey back. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.